The weight of the animal shoved him backward. He lost traction against a patch of frost. The wolf stayed with him, loosing her hold on the rifle and making another attempt to sink her fangs into his flesh. Ryan kicked out, fighting to keep her hind legs from ripping into his belly. He slammed a forearm into her face, creating some breathing room. Free of her for the moment, he rolled away, releasing the stire and pushing himself to his feet. But the wolf was already on him, launching herself like a gray arrow at his face. Ryan braced and reached out, seizing her by the front legs. He used the momentum to throw her behind him. She whirled back towards Ryan in a frenzy. The panga came free in Ryan's hand. He braced himself to meet her charge. He levered his forearm up under her muzzle. A fang ripped skin along his left temple, but the rest missed him. Ryan spun and put everything he had into a vicious stab that arced around to the wolf's side. The panga penetrated easily, hot blood spilling onto Ryan's palm and making his hand slick. He dragged the panga across the animal's underbelly to the other side of the ribcage. Steaming loops of entrails slipped free of the abdomen and dropped onto the ground, scattering blood over Ryan's clothes. Yanking his knife free, he wheeled, ready to help Jack. But Jack was already on his feet. Beside him, the great wolf was stretched out on a battlefield of blood, gutted. A deep incision started at the center of the beast's throat and ran straight back along his belly. Everything in between had spilled out in twisted coils.
No more of them.
You sure?
Uh-huh.
Ryan moved cautiously into the cave. The animal stink was intense. He took a self-light from his cache. The cave was about 5 paces across by 4 deep. The roof was low enough that Ryan had to stoop to keep from banging his head. At the back, a chasm sank into the wall. It ran back farther than he could see, but there was no animal smell in it. The flickering flame revealed a gentle breeze coming in through the cave mouth and blowing back through the chasm.
Wolves not live there. Nothing live there.
The sides appeared smooth, but had a rough texture to the touch, shaped by the elements rather than the hands of men. Ryan took that as a positive. The passage appeared to narrow at times, but it remained big enough for him to walk through as long as he minded his head.
Even if something else did live here, if we post a guard, it'll have a hard time getting in. We need a place to hole up and get a few hours' rest. This is it as far as I'm concerned. Let's go get the others. We can bring up some wood for a fire.
Ryan volunteered for first watch after the others settled in. He brought a blanket to wrap up in, hoping to block some of the chill. It provided enough warmth to feel almost comfortable, but not enough to make him relaxed enough to sleep. He sat 12 paces to the left of the cave mouth, where he could easily see along the way they'd come. He kept the stire across his knees. Doc sat beside him, also wrapped in a blanket. The man gazed at the stars with his white hair blowing around him.
You should be getting some sleep, Doc.
I will in a minute, my dear Ryan. Right now I just want to look up at the heavens and see if I recognize the constellations.
Morning's going to come bastard early, Doc.
I know. I'm excited, I suppose. With everything I've been through, pardon me, we have been through, I guess I had never really thought I would make it back here.
We don't know if you're back anywhere yet.
You may not be so certain, dear man, but I am. As you would know your home, so do I. This, whatever may remain of her, is Britain. See that group of stars by the Big Dipper? Those are Pollux and Castor, part of the group that makes up the constellation Gemini. And there, that bright one, that's Regulus, a heavenly gem set in Leo's mane. It is always best seen in the spring. And there is Arcturus, part of Bootes, the herdsman. And between him and Leo is fair Virgo. Her crown jewel is Spica. No, dear fellow, I am not imagining things.
Even so, things may not be as you remember them.
And what, pray tell, in this world of horror upon horror is? If we are able, I would like for us to find out if London still stands, if the hand of royalty still guides her destiny, to see if God saved the Queen.
If we can, Doc. If we can.
Major Drake Burrows stared into the collapsed tunnel. A trio of baby spotlights had been rigged up using alternate power sources.
A dusty haze obscured much of the scene, but enough clarity remained that he could see the broken rock and buckled steel plating that blocked the passage. Burroughs paced, trying to keep his anger in check so it wouldn't disturb his ability to command. He was still furious that no one had known about Walker's bolt hole, and worse, that no one had a clue about where it might lead. When he'd first been given the security assignment over the White Sands R&D complex, he thought the job was just a means of shelving him from the battlefield for a while. There'd been a certain zealous General McGuire who had accused him of taking a few liberties with the rules of the Geneva Convention during the Bosnian action. Then the general had dropped the charges. Before all else, Drake Burroughs had always put his country first. His father, a career military man, had done the same. Before he'd gone off to the battle that had claimed his life, the elder Burroughs had given his son a hug, then stood and saluted him, saying that he was leaving the future of their country in his hands until he returned. Drake Burroughs had taken the assignment seriously. When the destruction had rained down in 2001, he'd shown no hesitation about taking over the complex, then using Project Calypso to ensure he'd be around with enough time to rebuild.
Come in, Conti.
Sir.
What's your situation in there?
The Mattrans unit's back online, Major.
You'll be able to make the jump then?
Totally believe so, sir.
Your equipment, soldier?
Our equipment is in good shape, sir.
All of you?
Yes, sir. We got a few rations, but if there's a way to live off the land, wherever we end up, we'll do that.
Affirmative. Until you find Ryan Carter and his people. Then you get your asses back here however you can, as fast as you can, before I decide to declare you AWOL.
Yes, sir. We're green at this end.
Then be about your mission, soldier. And do your unit proud.
Yes, sir.
Carter, you and your people may have escaped for the moment, but it won't be long before Conti and his men catch up with you.
In the meantime, Burroughs had another item on the agenda, which Ryan's arrival had interrupted. There was a villain, Texas, that the Major had his eye on. Rebuilding a world, he knew, started with taking over the first objective, then following with the others. And he was going to find a way to do it. Project Calypso had given him all the time he needed. Tarragon clapped a hand over his mouth and lay still. The ground was cold against him, despite the warm clothing he wore, and he was finding it hard to mask the gray fog wisps of his breath because his lungs were still laboring from the run. The men behind him beat through the brush with their swords and staffs. Their lanterns looked like burning, baleful eyes as they swung from their handles. At 15 years of age, Tarragon believed in curses and dark gods and the fact that nature was stronger than anything man could create. What he didn't believe in was the prince's decision to start the time of the great uprooting. He breathed in through his nose and out through his mouth as his father had taught him. Foxglove had been one of the Thorpe's best druids, full of the fey gift, having only to put his hands upon a man, woman, or child of the village to know what to give them for their sickness. His father had also been one of the prince's most ardent opposers. 2 weeks ago, Foxglove had been found dead in the nearby stream. It was supposed to look as if he'd slipped on a wet rock and smashed his head in. But when Tarragon had put his hands on his father and held him and cried, he'd known that his father had been murdered. That was his gift, the knowing. Only he couldn't control it enough to convince others that what he saw was always true. He knew that at least one of his father's killers was among the men who hunted him. This night, with the help of Bean the stable boy, he'd managed to learn that. But they'd been discovered, cut off from returning to the Thorpe, not even knowing for sure whom they could turn to, they'd fled into the forest. They hadn't counted on the men following. Tarragon straightened and put his back to the tree. He gazed wildly around the thick copse. Demons and witches were reputed to live within their boundaries. The prince had tried to quiet such talk when he'd learned of it earlier, but it proved impossible. Children loved stories of terrors and monsters, and despite the fact that the young ones grew up into adults, those tales continued to haunt them, turning into beliefs. The bark was hard in his fingers, iced over from the cold and the frost. The hunters continued to close in, and he counted perhaps as many as a dozen of them. Maybe there were a few.